Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
So first of all, I mean, it's a pleasure for me to be here. My name is Simonetta Di Pippo. I'm Italian, and I'm an astrophysicist, and I got my master's degree a few decades ago at the University La Sapienza in Rome. Been working at the Italian Space Agency for quite a bit. Then I moved to the European Space Agency. When I moved from the Italian Space Agency to the European Space Agency, I was the director of the Observation of the Universe, which was the directorate dealing with space science and both robotic and human exploration. And then I moved to the European Space Agency as Director of Human Spaceflight. At the end of my term there, it was in Noordwijk in the Netherlands. I moved to Brussels for a couple of years because it was the moment in which the Lisbon Treaty entered into force. And therefore, there was an increasing, a process where the European Union and the European Commission were having more responsibility over the European space policy. And then in March 2014, I was appointed director of the Office for Outer Space Affairs at the United Nations in Vienna, position that I was there for 8 full years. And after that, I decided to take a new challenge, and I'm currently professor of practice of space economy at the Bocconi School of Management in Milan, but currently I'm also visiting at NYU Abu Dhabi. So I'm currently in the Emirates in this very moment, and I'm teaching space diplomacy. And at the same time, I'm also running a lab, a research lab in Milan called Space Economy Evolution Lab, which is supposed to become the center of excellence at global level on space economy. That's more or less the summary.
That is an extensive summary. That is a very impressive resume. Do you mind if we just jump right into some student questions? Some have been emailed to me already. Guys, keep them coming in the chat. This is very exciting. I know we have a lot of Italians on here. I'm excited that we have an Italian astrophysicist. So they want to know, what is life like? What is an average day of work like when you're working at the United Nations Office for Outer Space Affairs? Because that's not... that's to us Earthlings, that's not a normal office. So what are some of the things that you deal with that you're allowed to kind of talk about?
Yeah, well, it's easy in a way. The office is part of the Secretariat of the UN, which means that it reports to the Secretary General and therefore to the General Assembly. The UN, I mean, is quite a big, a complex organization, and you have the Secretariat on one side, and then the specialized agencies on the other side, like, for example, ICAO, UNICEF, UNESCO, FAO. All of these are specialized agencies, which means that each of them has a governing board made more or less by the same member states, but not reporting to the GA. So there is a different political scheme. What the office does? Well, the main goal of the office, the mission of the office, is to bring the benefits of space to everyone, everywhere. In particular, after the approval of the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, which this is something which happened in September 2015, is the, in a way, try to help, in particular, developing and emerging countries to benefit from the use of space-based data and infrastructures to develop services and applications to improve the quality of life of their citizens in terms of socioeconomic sustainable development. And if you look at the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, you will find that more or less half of the 169 targets which are underpinning the 17 SDGs can only be achieved if we use space technologies, which means that there is no policy or decision maker all over the world, in each country, in any country, which can really try to reach those objectives without the use of space. The office, therefore, does a lot of capacity building. We, for example, I put in place a program called Access to Space for All. And without spending any single penny, I put in place a certain number of agreements, and we allowed, for example, Kenya to launch its first satellite, developed by the University of Nairobi. So some students from the University of Nairobi developed this one-unit CubeSat, and which was launched by the Japanese and released from the space station. So in reality, this is just an example. Another important example is that we use space-based data to provide information to countries which are touched by natural and non-natural disasters. So through space images, we can derive some information which may be key for the rescue teams to save lives. This is another example. I could really talk 24 hours about what the office does. But in particular, as I said, it looks at everyone, because there is also the regulatory side. So we talk about, I don't know, the long-term sustainability of outer space activities, how to manage space debris in orbit, how to manage space traffic, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really a long, long list.
Well, no, I mean, I just read this morning about the space debris. It's what is the statistics? It's almost a million different objects floating around our planet. I mean, that'd be really scary to traveling out in space. You could be hit by anything, and that stuff is traveling really fast.
Yeah, it's true. And also, you know, this is what happened was that at the very beginning of this the space era, so we have to remind ourselves that at the very end, the first satellite was just launched in 1957, which is just a few decades ago. And now, in particular, with the development of these mega constellations, like, for example, Starlink, developed by Elon Musk to provide broadband internet to everyone everywhere. Again, he got something close to 12,000 satellites approved by the American authorities in charge of it. And he continues to launch satellites more or less every day. Each launch brings into orbit, which is a low Earth orbit, so between 300 kilometers and 1,000 kilometers. It brings every launch 51 satellites, and is getting close to 3,500, which means that in 2 or 3 years, we will have 7,000, 8,000 satellites of this constellation only in orbit. If you include this, I mean, if you consider this together with the fact that every year the number of satellites is really increasing in terms of you know, launches in presence in orbit, so you are fully right. On top of the debris, the orbits around the Earth are really congested. And that's the reason why it's extremely important that member states find, the sooner the better, let's say, an agreement on a governance regime, and in particular on coordination of space traffic, because each satellite needs to have on board fuel and technologies and systems able to let's say, perform what is called a collision avoidance maneuver. When there is information about the possible encounter between the satellite and another satellite, or between the satellite and space debris, then the satellite needs to perform maneuvers in orbit to avoid such collisions, such potential collisions. So you understand that on one side, it's a question of mitigating the future production of debris, but at the same time, it's also an issue of how we clean the orbits. And that's the reason why we talk about, on one side, space traffic management, and on the other side, clean space, or how to develop technologies able to help us cleaning up the orbits.
That's, I mean, the stuff that you guys deal with, and I can't imagine you have to deal with, like, nowadays, like, we've had a lot of like space stuff here in the States with like UFO stuff, or I think they're called EVAs. I can't remember. But you guys deal with the diplomacy, and you guys also deal with the sustainability. Like, it's just such a broad range of the stuff that your office deals with. It's just a never ending. There's always stuff going on. I'm going to unmute. We have Andrea, and he has a question. He's interested in studying astrophysics. He's an Italian and he's studying in Canada. Andrea, you should be able to unmute to ask your question. You wanted to know about some advice.
Yes. Hi. You hear me right? It's all...
You're good. You're good.
Okay.
Yeah. If you go louder, it's a little bit better.
Oh, well, that's... It's okay. Okay. Yeah. I was just wondering if you could give me some advice on the choice for university for physics, as you, I mean, astrophysics too. Maybe a university in particular would be better than another one, maybe. I don't know. Just some advice.
Well, it depends if you want to study in Europe or let's say North America. What's your preference? Because there are a lot of interesting, let's say, universities in this field and in general in space activities. Well, as I always say, the University La Sapienza, for example, is still one of the best. You probably heard that last year we got another Nobel Prize. I mean, that university is, let's say, is collecting Nobel Prizes, which is good, in particular in physics, also because was the on the side of particles and you know, that kind of physics is still the you know, the heritage of Enrico Fermi. But there are a lot of very interesting universities in the United States and also in Canada, a lot. It depends also which kind of angle of astrophysics you want to deal with. One of the points that I got fully convinced during, I mean, my 36 years in this field is that whatever you want to do in space activities, you cannot go only vertical. So for sure, you need to select what you prefer. So if astrophysics is what you prefer, well, go for it. But then if, for example, you need to develop an instrument, so you want to become a scientist proposing experiments to NASA or to the European Space Agency or whatever, because you want to discover something in terms of, I don't know, galaxies or black holes or planets or whatever you want to do. Well, you need to have also a lot of information and a lot of knowledge in other fields. You need to have really a quite good understanding of what international cooperation means, because all the experiments are done in international cooperation. Space agencies are really working all together. See what is happening now with the Artemis program led by NASA back to the moon. 21 nations already signed the Artemis Accords, which means that while in the past it was more a national activity, everything now, in particular in science, when we talk about space science, is done in international cooperation. So, and in order to do well in this field, you need to understand the other cultures, different cultures, you need to have quite a good, let's say, open mind when you talk about diversity and cultural diversity and different management approach approaches all over the world. If you look at the International Space Station, for example, it was developed, it's the biggest lab in orbit, 400 kilometers above our heads, and has been developed and is currently managed by 14 space agencies. Five space agencies and 14 countries, because Europe is represented by the European Space Agency, but the countries contributing are 10. So you have 10 countries in Europe, plus Japan, the Russian Federation, the Canada with the Canadian Space Agency, and the United States of America. So everything is really an international cooperation. And then you need to know a little bit about, you know, the regulatory framework, which means you need to know a little bit about multilateral discussions, which are the ones managed under the umbrella of the UN. And then you need to have a bit of knowledge about, you know, how to manage a project. So a bit of finance, because you need to manage your project also from a financial perspective. So keep in mind, then if you want to work in the space field, you need to have a cross-cutting and, you know, diversified mind and not going only vertical. But yes, there are a lot of interesting universities, depending if you want to do astrophysics, depending on the angle you prefer. So, but we can also provide some information offline if you want. Huh?
Yeah, I can connect you guys via email if that's okay. So, yeah, wow, that is a lot of stuff. That you truly are a Renaissance woman. And I'm sure there's a legal aspect too, because there's different courts and stuff involved. Like even, you know, it's kind of like it's an industry that's just being created, like problems and issues that are just arising, and then you deal with them as they're coming your way. One of the kids messaged and they wanted to know, who did you look up to when you were getting into this industry? Who was kind of like a trailblazer that you said, I want to do that with my life?
Well, I was 10 when the first humans landed and walked on the moon. Now, this has been the real, let's say, magic moment which created the spark in my mind that I had to work on this field. Maybe. One of the things is that I was really reading a lot of books when I was very young. And also, I had quite a big passion, not only for space, but in general for science. So I love biology, chemistry a lot. But at the very end, at the high school, I did what in Italy is the Liceo Scientifico, which means really a scientific high school. And then I decided for physics and then astrophysics and space physics. Today, I have to say that I cannot even think about a different life. Huh? Space is for me not a job. It's my way of doing things. It's my way of living. And it's also, you know, it gives you the possibility to travel, to see people with different cultures. And I cannot say that I had someone that I want to follow. What I wanted to do was to have a job which was allowing me every single day to learn something new. So I didn't want to have a repetitive job. I really want to do something allowing me to keep my brain, you know, alive, which is probably, I mean, it's autonomous, you know, my brain decides what it wants. Jokes apart, I succeeded. So I feel quite privileged of being able to succeed in my goal.
Well, yeah, you are certainly successful. And I have no doubt that you are inspiring some kids to follow in your footsteps today. So we have a question. This is from Italy. And this is Michelle. Michelle, you had an interesting question about the future of space. Go ahead and ask.
Do you think that the opportunities to work in astrophysics will increase or decrease in the future?
The possibility to work in the space field can only increase. The reason is that, in particular, space economy is defined by OECD as the space sector itself plus all the fields, the value created through, let's say, the use of space-based data, from agriculture to education, from global health to disaster management, meteorology, whatever. There are, I mean, plenty of applications for space. And today there's a value of about $470 billion. And it's an economy that can become a trillion economy by probably 2040, 2050. That we don't expect any stop in this process. We believe that there are really a lot of opportunities. This is probably one of the fields where there will be a lot of opportunities for people of your age. And also because the future is we are going towards a knowledge-based society more and more. And in fact, I'm used to say that we are already a space society, even if not necessarily everyone knows, considering that each of us is already using hundreds of satellites every single day, at least in a developed country. And so I believe that astrophysics for sure, but in general, all the jobs related to space will have quite an interesting, future. And I'm sure that it will expand a lot.
And who knows, some of you guys on this call could be filling those job opportunities in a few years to come. One of the kids, they wanted to know, what is your opinion? Because obviously you guys work in the sector where it's all of these different governments and different countries that are sending stuff to space. About what is your opinion regarding privatized companies sending, like we have SpaceX, we have all these like Virgin Atlantic's talking about going out there. And I know that your specialty is space traffic management. So what is your opinion on that?
Okay, so first of all, one of the important points to be underlined is that every satellite which is launched in orbit has to be approved by the competent national authorities. And the approval can only be granted if the satellites or the missions are in line with international space law. So it's the country which is responsible to be in line with international space law. And the United States, there are at least two or three different entities which have the responsibility to approve and to provide licenses. But it's really quite well crafted, and the insurance. I mean, you can rest assured that all the private companies are following precisely the rules. Now the issue is a little bit different in the sense that all the decisions at the UN. At least when we talk about space and outer space affairs for peaceful purposes, all the decisions are taken by consensus. So this means that you have 100 member states which have to decide every single, let's say, on every single topic, on every discussion has to bring this 100 member states to agree word by word on a document. Which seems impossible to reach, believe me, every time it's, I mean, a recurrent success. It takes a little bit more time, because if you vote, you may have people in favor and people against. But if you go for by consensus, well, it's a bit more, not cumbersome, but a little bit longer. And you need to have very good negotiators around the table. So this is also another skill that you need to have. When you talk about space activities. Well, one of the points is that I do believe that we have the opportunity to shape the future we want. And space is a global common. It has to be protected for future generation. the user space must be as democratic as possible and open and inclusive. And in my opinion, it's also a way potentially to become, I mean, also the exploration of the moon, which is not regulated right now. So it's also important that member states agree on the principles they want to use for the exploration of the moon, just not to repeat mistakes that we did on Earth on one side and that we are doing again in low Earth orbit. So let's work all together for a better future, because as we say, we need to contribute to the future we want.
That's a brilliant quote. I love that right there. So I know we kept you a little bit longer, but for the final question I asked, this is for all of our guests. What kind of advice would you have for these kids as they go off into the world and figure out what they want to do? You essentially created your own industry and your own position. And honestly, if someone were to come to Earth and say, take us to your leader, I'm pretty convinced that you would probably be the best person for that. So what kind of advice would you have for these kids as they figure out what they want to do?
Well, I believe that the first point is that, you know, there are a lot of potential showstoppers in the life of each and every one of us. And my personal approach is that I listen to a lot of different opinions, and then I take my own final decision. Because there is, I mean, also in terms, you know, of work-life balance on what you believe is proper in your life, each of us has a different balance. So there are no predefined rules which apply to each and every one of us. So, and I believe that's the best way to do what you like in your life, but it doesn't come, it's not given for granted. I mean, it's you really need to work hard in order to understand what is happening, keep going in trying to understand and learn. And I'm always saying that we need to learn how to learn. Because sometimes we have also to select the type of information that we want to absorb, that we want to really get with us and bring with us. Because the point is that, I never had a clear objective. My objective was, as I said, to have the life I have, in a way. Because sometimes if you have a very strict requirement for a clear and strict objective, like I want to become the director of this organization or of the other organization, and then you don't get it, then you get frustrated, and it's not proper. What is proper is that you have, at least for me, that you have really, that the world is your family, that you are against any type of discrimination, which is my case. I really want to be open and inclusive, and I believe I succeeded a lot in my life. I have friends everywhere, in every country, more or less. Even I'm always joking, I have friends in Bhutan, and sometimes, you know, people say, where Bhutan is, right? Okay, jokes apart, it's a wonderful country, by the way, and wonderful people there. But just to say that, it's a mixture of science and psychology and cultural nuances and psychology. It is really all together. And that's the beauty of this job. I mean, each of us can craft it as he or she likes. But you need commitment, you need to study, you need to work properly. And you need always to think about, to put yourself in the shoes of your counterparts. It's the only way to have good relationships. And again, as I said, try to, to build the future we want.
Sympathy, empathy, kindness. I love it. And was it grazie mille? I think, yeah. I said that. Thank you very much. I saw a bunch of heads perk up. But you also have a friend. You also have a friend now in Las Vegas, Nevada, where I'm at and wherever these kids are at. So before I let you go, I usually do this for all of our guests. I'm going to end the meeting for all, but first I'm going to allow everyone to unmute. And can we all say thank you to Director DePippo for talking to us today? Thank you so much. We appreciate you from the bottom of our hearts.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.